Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're starting the show today by talking about cross-country skiing with our guest, Jesse Diggins. In March, she won the last race of the season in Sweden and the overall and distance cross-country World Cup Crystal Globes. Her six individual wins in the 23-24 season were the most races an American has ever won in a single cross-country season. And she's with us today to talk about her season during which she raced to victory in Hayward, Wisconsin. Did you see her ski her way into history? Give us a call with your own questions or comments, maybe your own experiences cross-country skiing. The number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Jesse Diggins, welcome back. Good to have you back with us.
Thank you so much for having me on.
It's been great. It's been, I think, about 3 years ago we talked with you, maybe when your book Brave Enough first came out. But I want to congratulate you on your incredible season. Have you had kind of time to soak it all in?
Yeah, you know, I think I finally have, right? If you'd asked me right at the end of the season, I would have been just like, I don't even know what happened. I'm still trying to process it. But now I've had a little bit of time to kind of come down and look back and really appreciate what a fun and wild ride it was.
It had to be fun and a wild ride for sure. The World Cup itself, you know, we have a lot of cross-country skiers here in Wisconsin. I'm not sure everybody understands the World Cup. Can you describe it for us?
Yeah, for sure. So pretty much everyone knows we have the Winter Olympics every 4 years. And then the year before and the year after that, we have World Championships. So, for example, this year we have the World Championships in Trondheim, Norway. But then every single season, all winter from late November to late March, we race the World Cup circuit. And that can get a little confusing because, like, in soccer, the World Cup is just every 4 years, and it's one big tournament. But for us, World Cup racing is actually just a series, and we move from country to country pretty much every week. And so we're racing Saturday, Sunday, sometimes Friday, Saturday, Sunday. People can follow along with the FIS app for results. They can also watch us race live or on demand later. The commentary is awesome. So they can follow along and get to know their favorite skiers. And it's super fun because it's happening pretty much every weekend all winter long. And that's what was that's what we were doing in Minneapolis. That was one of the stops on the World Cup tour.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And I want to get to that. But you won your first overall World Cup title in 2021, if I'm not mistaken. How did this season compare to that one 3 years ago?
Well, that was the first of our like COVID years in the winter. Yeah. So it was definitely very stressful. Really high emotions. You know, it was a lot of, hey, if I can even just make it to the start line and be allowed to race, that's great. And so it was a surprise, and it was amazing. And to be honest, we didn't really celebrate very much because we were just trying to safely exit Europe and re-enter the U.S. at the end of the season. And so this year it definitely felt like, okay, we can celebrate a little more. We're a little less stressed about the overall situation here. And I just, yeah, it was really special because we achieved this as a team. This wasn't just something that I achieved. This was all of the WASTETs who worked so hard every single race all winter. This was all our coaches, all our support staff, all our volunteer doctors and PTs. There's so many people who put so much into this team so that we can go out there and race as hard as we can. So I really feel like this overall victory was a team effort and a team victory. And it was really special to get to celebrate it with everybody. And it was extra special because this season there were no world champs and there were no Olympics. So the World Cup overall was a big prize.
Yeah.
In the winter. And that made it all the more special to be able to bring it home.
Yeah, a big deal. Peggy in Cedarburg has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Peggy.
Oh, hi. I am so excited to hear Jesse on your program, Larry. A couple years ago, I was volunteering with some of my friends. We call ourselves the Berkey Babes. And we helped take your skis off at the finish line. And it was such a thrill. And I really appreciate all you've done to elevate cross-country skiing in the country here and abroad. And congratulations on your incredible achievement. Okay, my question. As I get older, I'm wondering if I need to change my style or slow down or do less skiing to maintain fitness, but then, you know, not get injured. So I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. So, Peggy's getting older? Peggy's getting older, and that's a good question, I think.
I think it's a great question. Well, thank you so much, Peggy, for the cheering and for volunteering and ski races and helping everyone at the finish line. That's really special, and it makes the race experience that much more amazing. So thank you. And I love your question because I always have believed that cross-country skiing is a lifelong sport. And it's so special because you can choose the effort and intensity that you go out at. So it's a little bit like running where you're like, yes, you can absolutely punish yourself and try to run a marathon at record pace, or you can just go out and jog and enjoy being on the trails. And with cross-country skiing, I love how, you know, in Norway, we see 80-year-old skiers out skiing the Berkey just at their own pace, just loving it, enjoying it. And so I don't think you have to change your style. I don't think you have to cut back the amount you ski. I think the intensity is completely up to you, and definitely making sure that you have the right wax on your skis can make it a more enjoyable experience, because then your skis are gliding a little bit easier and a little bit faster, which means you can put a little less effort and still be getting along the trail at a fun pace. So I think you can do it as long as you want to get outside and be enjoying the winter trails with your friends. So I don't think you have to stop or change your style. I think some of the beauty of the sport is having two totally different techniques to choose from. And because it's non-impact, even though it's a weight-bearing sport, you're gliding instead of pounding. So there is no impact. And so I think it's really safe to do as long as you're having fun.
Yeah, it is a lot of, I was thinking back over the year, as you were talking, I was thinking back over the years of cross-country skiing for me, and I'm certainly not going, let's say, as fast as I used to go, but it's still enjoyable to get out there.
Absolutely. I mean, my big goal is to ski the Berkey with my grandkids someday. Like, I really still want to be skiing as long as I'm alive. I want to be out there enjoying the winter trails, bundled up in some layers and just enjoying being out there. So that's my goal for sure.
Tom in McQuantico has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Boy, it's a pleasure to talk to you, Jesse. I'm one of those longtime skiers of, you know, I got 25 Berkeys in and a bunch of Cordalopas, probably another 10 of those, and then other races up there. And, yeah, you can ski forever. And I just wanted to say thank you for bringing such, you know, panache to the sport. So many people are so excited about you, and you're such a great spokesperson for what we do, you know, and what the team is doing. And the team has been pretty spectacular. I did want to ask one other question, though.
Sure.
Because I've followed your career quite a bit. You tried biathlon last year, and you said you kind of liked it. You want to elaborate on that?
Okay. I love this question. Thank you so much, first of all. And so I did try biathlon. I'd never shot a rifle before, and we were doing a set of roller ski races in Soldier Hollow in Utah. And the biathletes stayed after their races to teach all of us how to shoot. And I was like, well, I want to try it. That sounds really exciting. And so I tried it. I did love it. But I will say I'm so attached to my team. And to my specific teammates, I love the biathletes. They're amazing. But I've grown up on the road with my cross-country family. And so I don't think I could ever leave this family and this group of people. And that's part of what makes this sport so special. So I love cheering for biathlon. I love watching it. I would love to try it, like, recreationally. I don't know if you can recreationally shoot and ski. I don't know if I should say that on air, but I would love to try it some more. But I don't see myself making a switch.
There you go, Tom. Thanks a lot for calling. Well, Jack in Madison is on the line. Let's go there. Hi, Jack.
Hi, Larry. How's it going?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Yeah, well, a couple of things. So I am a two-time Coeur d'Alope finisher, and, you know, I feel really happy to have been, you know, taken part in one of the main events of the American Berkey Biner Gone Skiing up here. But I'm sure whatever I've done pales in comparison to what the multi-talented and accomplished Jesse Diggins has. Jesse, I feel very honored to speak with a pro athlete and an ambassador to the sport of cross-country skiing like yourself. This is really cool, you know, everything that you've done for the sport. I know I'm not the first caller to laud you with your accomplishments, but I guess to throw a question your way and kind of change things up, how did you first get started as a cross-country skier, and then what's your advice to people who are thinking of taking up the sport and then going pro with it, or just seeing how far they can go with their careers? Like, how would you go about doing that?
Well, thanks. These are awesome questions. So I first got started because my parents loved skiing. So my first introduction to the sport was from my dad's backpack, and he would just put me in there and go on skiing with my mom every weekend in a different park. They loved driving around to different parks from Wisconsin and Minnesota because we live really close to the border. So we would just go to different parks. And then when I was about 3 years old, we joined the Minnesota Youth Ski League. And that's where I learned how to ski. And it was mostly playing games, playing tag on skis, going on scavenger hunts on the different trails. It was all about having fun with friends while building some skills, but it wasn't serious racing. And that developed a real love of being outside in the winter and a love of the sport for me. And then I got more serious when I joined the high school ski team. So for people who are looking to try out the sport, you know, maybe get into it for the first time, I always recommend starting with a lesson, because I think getting some basic fundamentals with the technique will make it so much more enjoyable, so much more fun. And I also say give it a couple tries, because I think by the time you tried it for the third time, you're moving a lot more efficiently, and then it's starting to really become fun, and you're seeing the progress, like, oh wow, I'm getting my balance and figuring it out. And things are always more fun when you feel like you're not struggling against your skis or equipment. So I always tell people, like, be patient, give it a couple tries, and start out with a lesson. And then for anyone looking to potentially go pro or take it to the next level, for me, a big part of it is finding a coach that you really like and that you trust and that you think you can develop a good relationship with them, and they can help you create a training plan that really works for you and your life and the kind of athlete that you are. And I think that's really important. And then also finding a training group and a team that, again, like, that works for you and your life, and you work with them. And I think it's so much more motivating, especially if it's cold and rainy and you don't really feel like going out or roller skiing and you need to go get the workout done, knowing that your teammates are there and waiting for you and counting on you to contribute to the team effort and contribute to the workout dynamic. Then you're going to get out the door and you're going to go do it. So I think joining a training group and joining a team is huge.
Jack, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Our guest today, Jesse Diggins, reflecting on her latest World Cup winning season, cross country championship, and certainly taking your calls and some great calls so far. What about you? Questions or comments for Jesse Diggins? I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us, email address ideas@wpr.org. Joel Patnod, our producer today, our technical director, Jeff Robbins. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us today on WPR. Larry Mueller here with my guest, cross-country skiing champ Jessie Diggins, reflecting on her World Cup winning season and taking your questions and comments. I hope you join in. If you have one, give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Steve in Bayfield. Hi, Steve. Thanks for calling.
Yes. Hi, Larry. Hi, Jessie. How are you guys?
We're great. Thank you for calling.
Okay, just a quick note. I'm in Bayfield, and I play in a band, and we played a fundraiser for the Berkey Beiner Foundation, and it was a pretty high buck per plate meal. They raised a lot of money, and Jessie was there, and also I believe Gus, your contemporary skier from Wisconsin. But anyway, I got to tell you how gracious and accessible Jessie was. There's probably a couple hundred young ladies there with their dads and moms waiting in line to get pictures and autographs and that sort of thing. And so just wouldn't just compliment her on what a good ambassador for the sport she is.
Oh, Steve, thank you so much for calling. Do you remember that event, Jessie?
Yeah, thank you, Steve. By the way, the music was phenomenal. Really impressed. Thank you so much. And it was really an honor to be there.
That's great. Thank you. So, well, you won this year's Berkey, by the way. We should probably mention that.
Oh, yeah, and so did Gus.
And so did Gus.
That was really exciting.
Oh, man. Joe and Eau Claire. Joe, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I wanted to congratulate Jessie on her season, and I did get to see her ski by 5 times in the Berkey Beiner because I was one of the old-fashioned riders, and we didn't go till Sunday, so we got to go out along the trail side and watch her zip by. But I wanted to give a mention to her book. I know you mentioned it briefly in the introduction, but for anyone interested in skiing, it was a fun read. It was fun reading the play-by-play of your famous relay with Keegan Randall. And I thought the part about the eating disorder was interesting, too. You wrote very candidly about your struggle with an eating disorder. And for anyone who might ever be working with young athletes, especially girls, I think that was very important.
Thank you, Joe, for calling. Comment, Jessie?
Yeah, thank you so much, Joe. I really appreciate your words because that truly was the reason I wanted to tell my story and write the book. Of course, the stories about skiing and the Olympics and the racing were super, super fun to share, but it was so important to me to provide a potential, icebreaker, a way for parents and children to open up a conversation about mental health and eating disorders, and a way for coaches to understand what might be happening inside the minds of the athletes they coach if they're struggling. So I'm so glad to hear that you found it interesting and insightful, and thank you very much for your kind words.
Yeah, thanks very much. Appreciate it. You know, you've been pretty open about experiencing a relapse of an eating disorder. What happened there?
Yeah, well, so I started struggling again this past summer, and I knew right away that, this isn't something that I should have to keep secret or be ashamed of. I've learned so much since my first experience when I was 18 years old. I've learned that, mental health, it's as important as your physical health, and it's just as important to reach out for help. It's not something that I have to try to fix myself. If I break my arm, I would go to the doctor. I wouldn't try to just fix it myself. And so I went back to my care team and I asked for help, and I got so much unconditional support. My family, my husband were so incredibly caring and supportive, and it was as well as my team. And so it can be really, really scary to share with your support team and with your family when you're struggling and need help. But I have found time and time again, every time that I share, I have been shown how much these people love me and how much support they're willing to give and how they have my back unconditionally. And it's really powerful. And it's honestly brought us all even closer. So while I wouldn't wish upon anyone to go through a tough time and a struggle, I feel like the silver linings are that you get to find out just how much you're loved by all the people in your life who want to be there for you and who want to support you. So even though it's really scary to do that initial asking for help, it has absolutely been worth it every single time.
Very, and I saw a quote, you were quoted in The Guardian as saying, eating disorders are a mental illness, not a behavioral choice. It can affect anyone of any age, any race, any background.
Exactly. And I think there's still a lot of stigma around, especially eating disorders and mental illness. I think we have a lot of education to do. And that's why it's so important for me to talk about it and point people out to where they can go find resources. You can go to the EMILY program. They have a lot of helpful things on their website. You can go to the National Eating Disorders Education website, and they have a lot of information there as well. And I think it's just important to learn a little bit about it because, as you mentioned, it's not a behavioral choice. And, they're very real and they are very dangerous. And so it's very important that we learn how to support people.
Jessie Diggins, our guest today, great to have her back with us to talk about cross-country skiing and her second overall World Cup cross-country skiing title. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. Someone else wondered, how do you push through the pain and exhaustion you feel during races?
Oh, that's a great question. So a lot of that is practice. And so that's where training comes in. Like in a big moment, in your big race, it's not the first time that I've experienced feeling that uncomfortable. But I think for me, the biggest thing is that I ask myself two questions. Am I doing the best that I can right now? And if the answer is yes, I'm just going to keep doing that. But if the answer, when I'm being honest, is no, I could actually be doing a little bit more. Then I have to be honest with myself and I have to dig a little bit deeper so that I will always be proud of what I put out there in the race. And then I also ask myself, how do I want to feel at the finish line? Because I think we can all relate to this. Sometimes you cross the finish line and you're like, oh, okay, it's over. And you give yourself a minute to catch your breath. And then you look back and you're like, ooh, I'm really not as tired as I maybe should be right now. Like, I definitely held back. I have a lot of extra energy that I could have given during the race. And I don't like that feeling at all. I like crossing the finish line knowing that I put it all out there and I didn't hold back. And so when I ask myself that question mid-race, it's a really good motivator for me to keep pushing through the discomfort in the moment.
I tell you, I watched a short video, sort of a summary of the, which was exciting to watch, even though I knew how it was going to turn out. You had a lot of top three finishes, but the one that I was watching had to do with you losing a ski pole and a glove.
Oh, yeah. That was very exciting. That was, I think, our third race of the entire season. We were in Ruka, Finland. And somebody, just by accident, it happens in mass star racing, they stepped on my pole and my whole glove and the pole came right off my hand because it was quite cold out and I was wearing mittens, so I didn't have the straps as tight as I should have. And when I went to get a spare pole, we were moving quickly and I goofed up and I actually took the pole handle to my face and it hit me in the lip. And so I had this big fat lip and blood all over my face. And I had a spare pole that was a biathlon strap, so it wasn't, my hand was pretty loose in there, and I didn't have a glove. And at the finish line, it looked really dramatic. It probably looked so much worse than it actually was, but I actually didn't know I was bleeding because I was so focused on the race in the moment that I had no recollection of getting hit in the face at all. So I looked down, and my other glove was covered in blood, and I was like, whose blood is this? I was very confused.
Well, that was amazing to me because there you are skiing along with one pole and grab that other pole sort of on the fly. And so you had to go all the way back through the group of skiers and wound up in second place and was really pushing for first.
it
was an amazing performance.
I went from first place to 12th place back to second place, all in the span of about 5 minutes. So it was exciting.
Oh, it had to be. John and Cornell, speaking, we've been talking a little about equipment. John and Cornell, I think, has an equipment question. John, hi.
Hello.
Hi, John.
Hey, my question, I don't follow the sport very closely, but how does she feel about transgender men in her sport? And if they compete in it, how fair does she think that is? Thank you.
You know what? I was totally prepared for all the questions about equipment, but I haven't prepared an answer to this one yet, so... I'm just going to hold off until I've had some time to think about it.
Well, I thought he was going to ask about equipment. And so let's talk about equipment for a minute. For the person who is wanting to just get out there and start for the first time, or maybe they've tried it a few times and now want to get some equipment, what's your advice on skis and poles?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a little bit biased because I am a Salomon athlete and I've raced every race in my entire World Cup career on Salomon skis. But what I also love is they sell a variety of like a graduated system of skis. So you have everything from touring skis, you've got fish scales, you've got skins so that you don't actually have to put kick wax in the wax zone. When you're classic skiing, you can just pull them out of your car, put a little liquid glide wax on the glide zones, buff them up, and you're good to go. So I love that because there are a lot of options out there where if you're like, hey, I have an hour after work, I'm going to stop by the park on the way home. I don't want to spend a lot of time taking, you know, elaborate care of the equipment. You have some more entry-level packages that are really going to help you get out the door and get on the trails. And I love that. But if you're going for your third, fourth Berkey or more, and you're like, all right, like I'm moving up waves and I'm ready to, you know, take the commitment to make that next step, similar to getting a nicer bike, you know, upgrading to that next pair of skis is going to make a difference for you. And I always recommend people go to their local ski shop and ask for help getting skis that are fit specifically to them, because it does matter, especially the plastic skis, that they're fit to your weight range so that you're compressing them at the right time to get good kick. So, and the same with skate skis, like there are different lengths and different stiffnesses of ski. So definitely like visit your local ski shop. They're probably going to be super friendly and super helpful, and they're going to help get you set up.
Jim in Menominee has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Jim.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call. Great to talk with you, Larry and Jesse. Congratulations on your accomplishments. It's I was really pleased to hear you talk about how cross-country skiing can be a good low-impact exercise for folks who aren't those who would try and be in the exciting racing scene that you're in. I've been a skier for years. I've skied 44 Birkebeiners and involved in the Birch Leggings Club. And it's got us to really appreciate winter and like winter, look forward to winter. But this winter, as you know, has been a real struggle with the lack of snow, warming climate. And I know Jesse's been involved with speaking out to try and keep winter snow, work with doing things to mitigate climate change. And I was just wondering if she could let us know what some of the winter-specific or snow-specific avenues there are for us to make our message known to folks who have influence, politicians and so forth, using winter as a theme for mitigating climate change.
Yeah. Jim, thanks for calling. Jesse?
Yeah, I love that. So I actually serve on the board of Protect Our Winters, and they're all about mobilizing athletes and people in what they call the outdoor state. So anyone who is invested in being outdoors and protecting the outdoors in all seasons you know, it's our responsibility to make sure that we vote and we show up and we help influence these policies that are going to swing the needle in a really meaningful and faster avenue. So I think it's all about this awesome blend of personal accountability and big systemic change. So one thing I encourage people to do is call your representatives. You know, call your senator. Say, hey, you know, I love skiing the Berkey. I've skied 44 of them. I want to make sure that we can continue to have this really special event and continue to have all these awesome ways for people to get outside and be active and be healthy in the winter. This is really important to me, and I would love to see you take a really strong stance on protecting our climate. And that's really all you need to say, but when they hear from so many people over and over again, wow, like people are really passionate about climate. People are really passionate about protecting, you know, their snow and having four seasons. This is important to them. It keeps bringing climate to the top of their crazy big to-do list. And it keeps reinforcing the message, like, my constituents care about this. They want to see me act on this. So a simple phone call can take 30 seconds, or writing a letter to your representative can let them know, hey, I care. I'm watching what you do. And, you know, your actions will impact how I vote. And then the second thing I always tell people is make sure you vote, and vote on the local levels, too. Take a moment to check out, you know, I mean, and I know it's not just a moment, it's a lot of work and everyone's busy and everyone has a busy life. So I know it is, you know, asking something to ask people to carve out time to do this, but it is so, so important that you make your voice heard. This is the biggest way that you can impact who makes these huge decisions. And so please make sure that you're registered to vote and that you do so, because that's one of the biggest ways to make your voice count.
Well, well said. Jim, thanks again for calling. Bob in Cambridge will give you a chance. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Thank you for having this show, and congratulations on all your success, Jesse. I just wanted to – I have a nephew who's a biathlon racer, or raced at a pretty elite level for a long time. I think he might have even – skied with you at some point, and I wondered what you thought about I feel as though the Nordic sports, that biathlon and cross country, they just don't get the glamour and the coverage that downhill and ski jumping and snowboarding do. And I just wanted to thank you, first of all, it's an odd thing, but thank you for winning and keeping it in the public eye, and thanks for being such a good representative of the sport.
Oh, Bob, thank you. Well, it's nice to hear that, Jesse. I'm sure.
Well, thank you so much, Bob. And I think, yeah, we're doing what we can to keep growing these exciting sports, and we support each other so much. And so I think it's really cool to feel like we're slowly but surely, we're doing it. We're growing the sports.
You know, I think you probably used a little of your influence to get a Midwest race to Minneapolis in February, that's what I'm guessing anyway. But that must have been, for you to return to Minneapolis, which is what, just west of Afton, where you grew up, and then have tens of thousands mm-hmm. of fans show up in Theodore Worth Park to cheer you on. What was that like?
Oh, I have to say, that was a career-long dream come to life. I had always wanted to be able to race a World Cup in my own country, and it took just over 300 World Cups raced all around the world for over a decade before I finally got to come home and race. It was the first time I had raced in Minnesota since I was 19 years old, and I'm 32 now, so it was a long-awaited homecoming, and it couldn't possibly have been more special. All the amazing folks at the Moffitt Foundation, all the volunteers, every single person who's involved made it such a special World Cup. And I have to say, athletes and coaches and wax techs from every other country all around the world, the whole rest of the season, they kept saying, oh, but how about Minneapolis? That was so special. Like, they really felt so welcomed and they loved the experience. And I can't think of a higher compliment than that. You know, you have coaches who've been doing this for 20 plus years, and this stood out to them because all the fans were so passionate and so excited, and everyone did such a great job making the world feel so welcome. So I have to say, thanks for the Midwest hospitality, because it really shone through and people loved it.
Oh, man. Well, you're 32 years old. What's the upper end, do you think, for you or for most skiers who are competitors like you are? I mean, is there an age restriction on that kind of thing?
You know, it's funny because we were talking about how, you know, you can ski for your whole life. And we've seen athletes be top 10 in the world at age 40 on the World Cup. So it's a long lifespan at the highest levels of competition. And I love that. You have many, many years to enjoy it and to keep growing and learning. And I feel like right now, I feel like there's still some potential out there for me to grow and improve, especially in the technical side of things. So I'm very excited to be starting off my training season, because I feel like I have another level that I want to reach. I've definitely got a lot of goals. So I don't know when the exact end date of my career is going to be, but it's so exciting to know that, you know, you're still growing, still learning, and you can do this for quite a long time. I really think the limiting factor is more that it's so hard to be on the road and away from your partner and your family and your friends. I think that's really, really challenging, to be gone and mostly in Europe for 4 months out of the year. And that, I think, is what will eventually convince me to be at home more.
Well, you take a break, or you did this year at least. I think Joel was telling me, I didn't see your Facebook post, but Joel Patnod was telling me that you took a 10-day break.
Yeah. Well, so that was my minimum that I set for myself, and I ended up taking a little bit more, but I try to have a minimum of 10 days in the spring where I'm truly not exercising. Like, maybe I go for a little walk or do yoga, but I'm not sweating, I'm not running, I'm not doing anything other than taking a stroll around the neighborhood, you know, with my husband when he comes home from work. And it's just really, really important to me that I give my body a big chance to absorb all of that intensity of racing and reset, and also give my mind a good chance to just, you know, reset. And so that when it's time to start training again, I'm itching to be training. I'm chomping at the bit and I'm so excited and I really want to get out there and start roller skiing again. And only then am I ready to start training again, because if I don't give myself this break, I think I put myself at risk for injury. And I think it's important for people to know, like, you have permission to take a break when you need it. That's really important. And I think it, in our society that's very fast paced, it can be hard to reward yourself for slowing down and taking your break when you need it. But it's so important, because then I feel like I'm able to return so motivated and energized and excited and able to do better work when I come back.
Well, we're energized and excited to see what the next year holds for you, Jesse, in your racing. And I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I hope we can do this again. Maybe in April, when you take your break, we'll do it again. How does that sound?
Sounds awesome. I love this as an annual tradition.
Thanks, Jesse. Jesse Diggins, our guest today. She won her second overall World Cup cross-country skiing title in March of 2024. So, and obviously the most dominant cross-country ski racer in U.S. history, male or female. Great to be able to talk to her. And thanks for all the great calls and questions. You know, we got into climate a little bit there with a question from someone. And we're going to kind of keep the climate and weather side of things going as we visit with our weather guys. That next. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio.